Warning, this episode contains brain food that will lead to improved emotional and social intelligence. Thanks for tuning in to Harvesting Happiness today for a healthy serving of consciously prepared brain food. This is Lisa Cypress-Kamen, your host. For more than 13 years, I've been handcrafting these sound ideas for better well-being. Each week, I love spotlighting diverse thinkers and doers who are contemporary trendsetters and change agents, devoting their lives to creating a better world in which to live. I invite you to listen up and change the way you think about human happiness. Our award-winning content is fresh, optimistic, and purpose-driven media that promotes well-being from the inside out. Alrighty then, let's dive in. This episode offers psychosocial education designed to inspire and motivate our listeners. The information provided does not constitute a therapeutic relationship nor a substitute for professional mental health care. If you are experiencing a mental health crisis, call 911, go to your nearest emergency room, or for listeners in the United States, text 988 for the National Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening wherever you are. Thanks for joining me on today's show, where you will learn how to have Zen in the chaos, nurturing inner peace amid modern turbulence. My guest today is Oren J. Sofer, who teaches meditation and communication internationally. He holds a degree in comparative religion from Columbia University and is a certified trainer of nonviolent communication and a somatic experiencing practitioner for the healing of trauma. His teaching has reached people around the world through his online communication courses and guided meditations. A husband and a father, Oren lives in the San Francisco Bay Area, where he enjoys cooking, spending time in nature, and home woodworking projects. He is the author of Your Heart Was Made for This, Contemplative Practices for Meeting a World in Crisis with Courage, Integrity, and Love. Welcome, Oren. This sounds like a prayer. Actually, are a blessing for that we all need at this moment.
Yeah, may it be so.
May it be so. Oof. I'm just going to go oof for a second because I think we all need that collective sigh.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Let's go back to 2020, which when you began writing this book, we were in the midst of another crisis.
Several.
Yeah. Yeah, several, but not just one, several. And it felt like it couldn't get any worse. Mm-hmm. And then it has. Talk a little bit about your inspiration and what you hope your readers will take away from your book.
Thanks, Lisa. You know, the inspiration was multifold. First and foremost, that really difficult year we all had in 2020, from the pandemic to the murder of George Floyd and the movement into this sort of cultural and spiritual upheaval of the movement for Black lives. And then there was this season of really intense, devastating wildfires out here in the West where I live. And as a meditation teacher, one of the things that I felt like I could offer was some nourishment for the heart and some encouragement and guidance on how to develop the inner resources to contend with all that we were living through. Now, as you mentioned in the bio you read, since then I've become a father. And so the other inspiration for this book, I've been meditating for 25 years. And I think, as you know, I've done a lot of work around communication and integrating mindfulness and meditation into our personal relationships. But as I've made the shift into being a parent and really looking ahead to future generations, I wanted to grapple more deeply with the question of, how does our meditation and our contemplative practice, our spirituality, our self-care relate to creating a better world for our children? I wanted to understand more about how what I've been doing for the last 25 years relates to the need to build a better world. And so it was really a deep dive into that question. And my hope for what people take away, gosh, there's so many. I think on the one hand, my hope is that it's a very positive message that the future is not written. What we do and say today matters and shapes the future. And that begins, it doesn't end, but it begins with how we live. It begins with the choices we make every day in our own hearts, our own minds, and our own relationships. and that we actually have the capacity to develop this beautiful array of really powerful transformative resources inside that we can then bring to bear on the very difficult problems we're facing in our communities and around our world.
You know, I think about the word to bear, and we are all bearing so much right now, you know, with heavy heart, with worry, concern, not only for ourselves, but for the future of the world and our communities. It can be overwhelming at times.
Yeah.
And
it can.
It can. It can.
It can. Yeah.
And contemplative practices can have a really beautiful way of bringing us back to what we know to be true.
Yeah.
Separated from the realities that go on out in the world. We cannot discount what's happening. And at the same time, being aware of what's going on inside and activating these internal resources, I think, are the only way we get through it. I mean, I think back to the pandemic, how so many people coped, how so many yoga teachers quit focusing on teaching really hard yoga classes online and focused on breathing.
Yeah, you know, restorative.
Going restorative and going back to really the elements, like breathe. It's okay. Breathe.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're pointing to something really important, Lisa. And one of the things I've been saying is that I think that contemplative practice is a kind of medicine for our times, for our stressed, overwhelmed hearts, and for our fragmented, dysregulated nervous systems. It's not something that's esoteric or just for spiritual or religious people. And meditation is only one form of contemplative practice. The analogy that I like to use is it's like the difference between, say, running and exercise. Not everyone likes to run, but it's important that we all exercise. In the same way, not everyone likes to or wants to meditate. But do we have a relationship with our inner life? And are we able to build the skills and the resources that empower us, make us more effective, and really add richness and balance to our lives? So in terms of the kind of overwhelm that you're speaking to, that I know so many are experiencing today in so many different ways, whether it's from world events, war, the ecological crisis, or just the sheer pressure of inflation and economic uncertainty. Yeah. There are two key themes that run through the book that seem relevant to share. One is taking a trauma-informed approach to contemplative practice. And there are three key principles I talk about for this. So the first is starting from a place of wholeness and being oriented, really just taking the time to connect with where we are and whatever feels okay enough, right? Just being able to look around and see the beauty of the trees or the sky or take a deep breath. So the more we start from a place of groundedness and being oriented, that sets us up for success in terms of exploring and cultivating the inner world. The second piece is to start small, to just take things one step at a time. I think the tendency a lot in the dominant culture in the West is to try to dive right into the center of the pain and tackle the most difficult and aim for the catharsis and the big shift. And while that can happen, it tends to blow us out or overwhelm us. So real lasting transformation, as far as I can tell, on both a personal level and a social and structural level, comes from the patient, sustained daily work, not from these big, short bursts of energy or explosion. So this is the second principle, to start small. And then the third is to move back and forth between what's difficult or challenging and something that's nourishing. And so we started this conversation with that beautiful invitation from you to just sigh, to just let out an out breath. And the book is sort of woven with a rhythm of that sense of moving between things that are nourishing, like joy or rest or gratitude or ease, and things that are more demanding, like energy or courage or resolve or devotion. And needing to recognize and appreciate this very natural rhythm that can animate our lives between stepping back, resourcing, resting, and moving into action and activity.
Take a moment and explain different kinds of contemplative practices, because I think that many people, as you mentioned, they focus in on meditation, which is a form of a contemplative practice, but there really are unlimited practices.
So let's just define it first. So I define contemplative practice as anything that strengthens awareness, reflection, and gives us perspective, and that examines meaning and purpose in life. So when we take that definition, we can see that there's so many ways to do that. Spending time in nature, art, storytelling, relationship, ritual, all of these things explore meaning, value, purpose, help us step back and strengthen our capacity as human beings to be self-aware and reflective.
And it doesn't have to be so poetic either. Like, and I'll give you a couple of examples. One of my own favorite contemplative practices is doing laundry, is folding the laundry. Mm-hmm. When I fold the laundry, I'm absorbed in, you know, the touching of the fabric, the way that I fold it, the way I match the socks up. And it's a silly kind of thing, but it does take me out of that racing mind, the monkey mind.
Yeah. Yeah. Or just something as simple as having a cup of tea, right?
Yes.
Or taking a walk in the morning. One of the things I talk a lot about in the book, again, just to bring it down to earth as you're inviting us to, is how something also as simple as changing a diaper, which I've been doing a lot of the last year, you know, can be a practice of devotion, of love, of patience, that there are all of these very powerful capacities, which I refer to as qualities in the book, that we have as human beings that we can strengthen, that we can actively cultivate every day if we know how to attend to them and bring them into the very ordinary activities that we engage in all the time.
So what I'm hearing you say is that we need not look to add burden or add different practices that can be burdensome, but to look for the things that we already do where we're able to find those extraordinary little moments.
Yes, exactly. And that essential in being able to do that is beginning to understand, one, that we have the capacity to choose where we place our attention, and two, that we can strengthen that and do it with a certain level of intentionality and wisdom, so that every moment, every day becomes, instead of something that's a burden, an actual practice of living into our humanity more fully. Because every day we're practicing something, right? We're either practicing, you know, feeling rushed and frustrated and agitated and petty, or we're practicing being patient and kind and understanding. And it just depends on how we're choosing to live and use our attention.
This is the perfect time to take a pause. And when we come back, we will continue the conversation with Oren J. Sofer. We're talking about his book, Your Heart Was Made for This, Contemplative Practices for Meeting a World in Crisis with Courage, Integrity, and Love. To learn more, please visit orinjsofer.com. On Facebook and Instagram, that handle is Oren J. Sofer, and that's S-O-F-E-R. Here comes the pause. We'll be right back. Research tells us that happiness is good for our health. Happy people live longer, are more productive, and make better partners, parents, and professionals. Want more sound ideas for better well-being? Check out our new bonus edition content, More Mental Fitness by Harvesting Happiness, available exclusively on Medium and Substack. One thing I know for certain, happiness waits for no one, and at times we all need a little support. To learn more about lifestyle management and mental fitness consulting services, please visit harvestinghappiness.com. And we're back, continuing the conversation with my guest today, Oren J. Sofer. We're talking about Zen in the chaos, nurturing inner peace amid modern turbulence. Let's get back to the conversation. So, Oren, you gave us three very simple tips to help us sort of reorient ourselves, right? You talked about grounding, starting small, moving back and forth between the more easeful aspects of our lives to give ourselves a little break, and then moving into the more challenging aspects. So being able to toggle with some flexibility.
Yeah.
What are some other ways that we can help maintain or even bolster our focus and our energy levels when it feels as though we are carrying the weight of the world on our shoulders?
Yeah. Thanks, Lisa. I think the first thing is to make space for the discomfort that we're experiencing. It's hard to be human, period. and it's really hard to be human, I think, in our world today. And of course, that challenge falls disproportionately on us, depending on all kinds of social and structural factors because of the way our society is set up. The first step, if we're wanting to have more energy, more focus, more balance, more clarity, is to just acknowledge the truth of that challenge and make some space for it, to just, you know, feel the tightness, the heaviness, the frustration, the feeling stuck, the helplessness. The more we push against that, resist it, try to avoid it or get away from it, number one, we expend valuable energy just trying to keep it at bay. Number two, in a certain way, it's counterintuitive. We actually strengthen that conflict inside, because to push something away, you need to grab it first. So if we're feeling exhausted or overwhelmed, but we're avoiding it, not only are we wasting energy, but in some sense, we're strengthening that experience. So the first is to try to find some way of, again, just acknowledging like, okay, yeah, this is hard. You know, I don't like this. That's the truth of what's happening. Then, of course, we need nourishment. When we're tired, we have to rest. When we're hungry, we have to eat. When we're stressed out, guess what? We need a break.
Yeah.
And not all of us have the luxury of taking a day off or going out into nature, but how do we spend our time? When we have 5 minutes waiting in line, do we pull out the device and scroll? Or are we able to close our eyes and just breathe or look around and find something that's uplifting to look at? Or strike up a conversation with someone near us and enjoy the wonder of a spontaneous, real connection with another human being? There's so many ways to nourish ourselves. And so this is the sort of immediate process, I think, of engaging with this challenge so many of us find ourselves in. But then there's a deeper process, Lisa, which I think is about stepping back and reevaluating how we're living. How are we using our energy? How are we trying to engage or maintain focus? And I think that a lot of us come with certain unquestioned assumptions and ingrained ideas that actually don't serve us. So take energy, for example, which is one of the chapters in the beginning of the book. I think many of us here in the West, in the global North, we've internalized this model of the fossil fuel energy model, which is this kind of extractive, explosive, as much as possible, as fast as possible way of doing it. And, you know, it's why we've got a coffee shop on every corner in every major city, and why so many people use willpower and striving and caffeine to override our limits. So what would it be like to cultivate a more sustainable and renewable kind of personal energy? And that involves looking at how we motivate ourselves. Are we doing things out of obligation or because we're genuinely connected to our values and a sense of willingness inside? Are we able to stay aware of our body and take pauses or small moments for rest and recharging throughout the day? These are things that can shift how we're living and actually allow us to discover and maintain a much more enduring sense of energy. And it's the same with focus. So I have a whole chapter on concentration, which I think is one of the most rare and underrated capacities in our modern society. We're so scattered, fragmented.
Overstimulated by exactly. Not just caffeine, but by the media, the news, by traffic. I mean, all the bells and whistles of life.
Yeah. Technology, notifications, these have an effect on our nervous system and on our attention. So focus, the tendency in many cases is to try to focus through sheer willpower, which as anyone who's ever tried to meditate knows, it can work for a little while, but it's brittle and expensive energetically. And eventually we just burn out or rebel because it's not sustainable. But we all have had the experience of what's known as a flow state, where we're relaxed and focused because we want to be, because we're interested, because we're connected. So starting to tap into and understand that capacity and how it arises from interest, from relaxation, from clarity of our intent, and we can learn to actually cultivate that, to tap into our natural capacity to be deeply connected and present without this kind of quality of tension and striving.
Let's go back to what you were saying about sort of resisting what is and what that does to us. And when we are sort of grasping and clinging and wanting things to be different than they are, and how it exacerbates the problem, right? Because of the expenditure of energy, as you describe. And then what happens when we stop grasping and clinging and we just let go? The sensation that we have the opportunity to feel.
Yeah. I mean, this is a core principle in any kind of healing work, which is based upon the empirical truth that we live in a world of change beyond our control. And trying to hold on, control, or resist what cannot be held on to or controlled, it inevitably creates friction and tension. And that friction, that tension is a kind of struggle, which we experience as suffering, as adding a quality of being burdened to what's already unpleasant. Now, there's something really important here, which is one of the points I make in the book and a theme that actually runs throughout the book, of this connection between our internal practice of letting go and exploring resistance and the collective experience of resistance. So not all holding on leads to suffering. Not all resistance is reactive, right? So we hold on to our values, to our aspirations, to our commitments, to our vision of equity and justice. We resist the forces of greed and delusion and dehumanization in the world. So there's a kind of generative resistance of social movements and trying to create justice and equity that comes from love and compassion rather than from reactivity or avoidance or denial.
And this is the silver lining to these very difficult times, I think, that in my experience and what I've sort of witnessed with the kinds of guests that I get to speak with and where they're focusing their energy and their work is very, very hopeful, is promising and uplifting. And it neutralizes this overwhelm that we could easily experience.
Yeah.
We're nearly out of time, and I want to make sure that we cover the 26 positive traits or qualities that you refer to in the book, Your Heart It Was Made for This. Talk a little bit about these qualities and why the number 26.
Yeah. So these are 26 beautiful capacities that we have as human beings, everything from ones we've already talked about, like energy and concentration, to ones we haven't, like curiosity, courage, kindness, patience, empathy, joy, rest, wonder, gratitude, devotion, playfulness. And I chose them based on my own training and experience in Buddhist meditation specifically. So many of them are coming out of really ancient classical Buddhist teachings, but applied to our modern context. And then there are other ones like rest or play that are not explicit in that body of work, but that I recognize and many meditators recognize are really essential for a life well lived, as well as being effective or succeeding in any endeavor, whether it's meditation or our work or building a better world for our children. So there's 26, because the idea is that I wrote this book to be a companion for people in their lives. And if you take 2 weeks for every chapter, you've got a whole year of training. And the chapters are short. There's like, you know, 8-10 pages, and each ends with a different practice, a reflection, a meditation, an action, some tips on if you hit roadblocks or difficulties in the ideas, to take the medicine that's needed in the moment and use it as a guide, as a companion for our lives.
I'm thinking of something that one of my professors shared when I was in graduate school about healing being the application of love to the places that hurt. And I mean, this has been a long time, and I have never forgotten that line, because I think this is what you're offering, right? That's sort of applying self-love, applying mercy to ourselves and grace.
Yeah.
Is part of what this is about.
Yeah. And that when we can do that, or I should say perhaps, the more we can do that, the more we have to offer the world.
Yeah. The better we are, right? The more useful we become.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's really the invitation of this exploration, is to see how our healing and self-care and inquiry and development internally is actually not separate from our lives in the world, our relationships, or our role as community members or citizens, but that actually the two can inform and support each other. The more resourced we are, as we just said, the more we have to offer. And then the more we engage, the more we find ways to express our love and our care and our hope and our vision, the more energy we feel, the more empowered we are, the more we feel a sense of momentum towards our goals personally and collectively. I think that there is too much pain and need in our world today for any of us to do everything. But that also means that there's too much pain and need for us to do nothing. So it's that invitation to look and see, like, well, what is mine to do? And to just focus on the good in front of us, on what it is that we can do.
Yeah. I like that. What is mine to do? Where do I fit into this? And how does my congruity as a human, you know, so I walk and talk the same game, no matter what corner of my life I'm in. You know, I know that it's unified, it's synthesized, that I'm doing this work in all aspects of life.
Yeah, we have integrity.
Yes. Yeah. Oren, thank you for joining me today. This has been a pleasure to come at this topic in a little bit of a different way and hopefully portray it to our listeners in a very user-friendly, applicable way to find another way to have this contemplation and thus give ourselves some space and some breath.
I certainly hope so. Thanks for having me, Lisa.
That's the goal. My guest today has been Oren J. Sofer. We're talking about Your Heart Was Made for This, Contemplative Practices for Meeting a World in Crisis with Courage, Integrity, and Love. To learn more, please visit orenjsofer.com. On Facebook and Instagram, you can find Oren at Oren J. Sofer, and that's S-O-F-E-R. Thank you. Thanks for joining us on Harvesting Happiness today. This is Lisa Cypress-Kamen on behalf of my guest, Oren J. Sofer, wishing you kind thoughts, kinder words, and the kindest of actions. Until next time, remember, happiness is an inside job. Happiness is your inside job. Please go out and rock your day, and remember to be kind to one another. Want to take a deeper dive into sound ideas for better well-being? Check out our new bonus edition content, More Mental Fitness by Harvesting Happiness, available exclusively on Medium and Substack. Keep harvesting your own happiness anytime, anywhere, from the comfort of wherever you are. Subscribe, listen, and share hundreds of downloadable episodes from wherever you get your podcasts. Connect with and follow us on most social media channels. To learn more about lifestyle management and mental fitness consulting services, please visit harvestinghappiness.com. Harvesting Happiness and More Mental Fitness are produced by me, Lisa Cypress-Kamen, Andrea Mengele, Robin Boyd, Andrea Daly, and the awesome team at Podfly Productions, including Eric Begay, Kimberly Beck, and Alec Guess, in collaboration with TogiNet Radio, KBUU, RadioMalibu.net, and is available on PRX, the Public Radio Exchange.